from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today, I'll get the scoop on IUPUI's Literary and Arts magazine.
I'll hear how the New Century String Quartet is celebrating its 10th season.
And I'll get a preview of the Indie Convergence Dance Festival. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Genesis is the literature and art magazine of IUPUI. Established in 1972, Genesis has been produced exclusively by undergraduate students with an issue made every spring and fall. Travis DiNicola spoke with senior editor Margaret Stoner and managing editor Tanya Smith about the magazine.
Genesis, which the next issue is actually coming out in April, is the literary and arts magazine for IUPUI. You're both editors of that. Let's start with just talking a little bit about the history of Genesis, or the genesis of Genesis, I suppose, because it's actually been around for a little while, right?
Yeah, it started in 1972, and actually the first issue came out in spring of 1973.
Mm-hmm.
It's still holds true to the theories that it began on, to give beginning writers and artists a chance to have publication, a first publication. So we still do that, and we get a lot of good work.
And it's published twice a year, or every semester, is that right, like spring and the fall?
Once each semester.
And then who actually oversees it, which department? Is that from the English department, or is it connected with Heron, or how does that all work?
It's English department currently.
Okay.
We do have a strong relationship with the Heron School of Art because we do publish a lot of their work. So that's something that's also important to us.
Now tell me about your roles in it. You're both editors, and I'm assuming you're both in the English department, correct?
Both English majors.
Margaret, you're a junior, is that right?
I am, yes.
An English major, and how did you get involved with Genesis?
Well, I was actually, I went to Brebeuf here in Indianapolis, and I was on the staff of my high school literary magazine, and I came to IUPUI about 2 years ago, and immediately I was interested in getting involved with the literary publication. It was really easy to get involved. The way that someone becomes an editor is by taking a class called W280, which is Literary Editing and Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And after taking this class, anyone can become a senior editor on Genesis. So I sort of went through the process of taking the class and so forth and kind of volunteering my time. And eventually I became editor.
Cool. Now, is it something you get credit for or get paid for, or is it a volunteer position?
It is a volunteer position. However, there is an optional internship credit, which is one credit per semester. And in order to receive that credit, you just have to write an essay at the end, mm-hmm. kind of explaining what you've done. A lot of people do stay on the staff even when they don't need the internship credit. And there are two work-study positions available through the magazine. So some people will be getting paid for their work on the magazine, but most of the people are just volunteers.
Okay. Tanya, tell me about your involvement. You're a senior now, right?
Yes, I am.
And you've been involved with the magazine for a couple years?
Yeah, since about my sophomore year. I check my emails diligently, so
mm-hmm.
Sometime, I don't know, fall, sophomore year, I saw the email, join W280, be an editor. I thought that'd be a good way to incorporate my love of reading and writing into something a little bit more career-oriented. So that's how I got into it, and now I'm a senior editor. So
the career orientation here, I imagine, mm-hmm. is pretty important. I mean, both, you know, being English majors and knowing that certainly, you know, getting jobs in the field of English is not always easy. You know, I mean, often, yeah. it, you know, the, excuse me, often, you know, the option is, you know, to teach. Of course, everyone wants to write. But actually, the field of editing and publications really provides a wider variety of job options for you that that you're really learning about now, I would assume.
Yeah, I'd say we're definitely learning a lot. I think Genesis is probably one of the most involved student organizations on campus. And because it's 100% student-produced, all the work we publish is by students, it really gives us the opportunity to organize ourselves and to kind of be forced to work together almost as if in an employment situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really it's a great opportunity for us.
Yeah, it's a nice paraprofessional opportunity. I do a lot of administrative work as managing editor, so I'm working with, like, the budget and, of course, management and overseeing who does work where. So it's a great way to build a leadership background, especially with the diverse skill set English majors come out with.
Now, do you have, you must have faculty advisors for this, I would assume?
Yep, we do have a faculty advisor. Currently, our advisor is Jim Powell, who mm-hmm. is one of the English professors at IUPUI, and he, actually the idea for the class W280 was his. We have had different faculty advisors over the course of Genesis, but
it's usually a rotating staff, and
yes.
Emails back to Jim.
Sure. But Jim's also very involved with a lot of other organizations, including the Writers' Center, of course, in town. It's great mm-hmm. to have him as an advisor. Tell me a little bit about the process as far as editors. What are you looking for in putting together a new issue? I mean, right now you've got the new one coming out in April, so I assume it's getting ready to go to press. The process as far as how do students submit? Is it limited to just students in the English department and in the art department, or is it open to everybody? What do you look for in terms of what makes for a good submission?
We're open to all IUPUI students, graduate and undergrad. We get most of our work from undergraduates, and we get a lot of School of Liberal Arts students. We get lots of Heron students, and we're always excited to see stuff from Heron. And we're actually branching out now to incorporate the other schools more. We have a new media program with lots of great talent, the computer graphics and screenwriters, and the other schools, such as informatics, have been putting out some good work, and also the journalism school, of course, with nonfiction work.
Mm-hmm.
So we really try to serve as many and as diverse of a population at IUPUI as possible.
And then what sort of criteria goes into as far as, I mean, obviously you can't include everything.
Well, basically we have a blind reading process. So even though we are within our staff divided up into sort of different editorial categories, pretty much everyone on the staff will read the body of work we receive and will vote yes, no, or maybe, and eventually we'll narrow down to about 50 pages, give or take, of work, including the art. And usually I'd say we probably select about 30% of all the work that we receive, which is relatively high. So it is really not too difficult to get your work mm-hmm. published, especially if you continue to submit. We encourage people, even if they don't make it the first round, to come back and try again. And we're always willing to offer feedback to those who we do select.
And that's why we have W280 too, to prepare mm-hmm. the editors to know what goes into the selection process. Literature analysis is really important. What's good and what's bad, being able to identify that and talk about it with the group especially is important. And with the art, we have people who actually double major in English and mm-hmm. fine art, so we get some good feedback from them too. And a lot of times the people who focus on art can help the rest of the group as far as how to analyze a work, and same with people who focus on poetry or prose. Some of us are poetry writers, some of mm-hmm. us are nonfiction writers, and some of us are fiction writers. So we take the criteria as far as what makes a good piece of art, depending on who we have on staff, which changes, and we try to make it as fair as possible.
Let me ask you this, because I imagine you're both writers as well. The work that you're doing on Genesis and the process of looking through submissions, reading through them, discussing with your peers as far as what makes for a better piece, has that affected your own writing at all? Start with Margaret.
I'd say it's definitely affected my writing. I would say it's almost made me a little more cautious with my own writing, because
I tend to be more critical when I look at my own writing after spending so much time analyzing other people's work. And it can actually pose somewhat of a problem because I'm sort of become a little overcritical of my own work. On the one hand, I think it's actually a good thing because it causes me to look at a lot of aspects of my writing that I may have not considered beforehand, and kind of going along with the general trends in writing, what's new in contemporary writing, it definitely keeps me up to date as to what direction I want to head in.
Sure. I'm sure it helps to be aware as far as what you think editors are going to be looking for. And
exactly.
And Tanya, how about you?
It kind of gives me more of a sense of what I think I like versus what I don't like, and a sense of what readers might like and what they don't like. Especially as I've moved to a more, I guess, administrative management position, I think about what will the student body like? What will they appreciate? And that's a big point with me when I'm writing. I'm like, will the readers understand what I'm saying, or will it completely lose them? So that's what Genesis has taught me as a writer.
Excellent. Now, the debut party that you have coming up on April 6th, 7 p.m. In the Lilly Hall at the IUPUI Library. What happens then? Are there readings? Is it just a great big party handing out copies
well,
of Genesis?
Well, it's a lot of fun. What we do is we invite all of those who are being published in our current publication to bring their family and friends. And those who have published written work will have the opportunity to read their work. And we simultaneously have a PowerPoint presentation of all of the artwork playing in the background, which is nice. The way it's set up is there's a lobby, and we have a reception sort of before and after with some refreshments and sort of an art gallery of a lot of the works that we've published. It kind of gives everyone an opportunity to celebrate their accomplishments as writers, and also for us to present the magazine that we've spent the whole semester working on.
And that event is open to the public?
It is, and we highly encourage community members to come and see what kind of talent IUPUI has to offer.
And, of course, if you go, you can pick up a copy of Genesis then. If you miss that night, how do you get a copy of it?
Well, we do have on-campus submissions in many locations, but we've recently kind of expanded our magazine to be distributed off campus. Some of the locations that we like to distribute at are local coffee shops such as Mojo's Coffee on Michigan or Hubbard and Craven's at 49th and Pennsylvania, Lazy Days in Irvington, and the Monon Coffee Company in Broderville.
Okay. So all those places you can go and check one out. And
yes, you can.
Excellent.
While supplies last.
While supplies
they go past some places.
That's great. That's great. So I know you brought some copies of some of the previous ones with you. Was it something you wanted to share from those? Or?
Well, I thought maybe we could sort of talk about two pieces we have, one of which is an art piece and one of which is a poetry submission. Tanya, if you'd like to discuss the poetry submission we have.
Okay, yeah. This is our best of poetry piece. It's actually in honor of Elizabeth Bishop's filling station, and it's a really well-done imitation, something that doesn't read completely like the original poem, but it shows the creativity, and I think honor is a good word for it because it's talking about the writer, the speaker's mother, and it's this really great atmospheric piece where you see this mother in her this room where she creates, and she's sewing, of course, because the title is Sewing Room, and it's not perfect, it's not tidy, but it's her space, and that's where she does her work.
Very cool. Okay.
This is
Margaret?
Actually just one more word about the poem. It's by Deanna Morris, is a student at IPUI, and she is an English student, and what I liked about Deanna is she is an older student coming back to school and kind of rediscovering her love for writing. And what's exciting is she's actually in the process of applying for her master's in fine arts in poetry right now. So we're excited to see what happens with this. And we feel really honored to be sort of a first publication for her. In terms of art, we do, like I said, get a lot of submissions from the Heron School of Art, which is great for us because we get a lot of great work. One submission that we have in our last magazine was called Heimat by a sculptor named Treva Mitchell, and this sculpture was 17 feet tall and 800 pounds, and in November 2009, it was installed.
Which is hard to fit into a magazine.
Right, well, it's a photograph of it, but It was very large, and it was actually installed in the private residence of Miss Crystal DeHaan in November of 2009. So we think it's really great that we can showcase work that's actually becoming a part of our community.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on that as well.
Thank you.
Can you give us a preview as far as what's going to be in the spring issue? I know it's not quite out yet, but...
Well, we're actually in the process of doing a redesign with our magazine, so we're going to have a new and improved shape and some more color pages, so we'll be able to better feature some of our art pieces. I don't know, Tanya, do you want to mention any specifics?
I think it really shows the diversity at IUPUI well. We have a lot of new people submitting to Genesis, and we're just seeing some really interesting new stuff. Again, like computer graphics, we have a couple artists who worked in that, and I'm excited to see.
We do have a very large international community at IUPUI, which is great because we get stuff inspired from people all over the world. Normally, you wouldn't expect to see so much diversity in Midwestern Indianapolis, but IUPUI is an extremely diverse school, and we really try to draw from that as much as we can.
Well, I look forward to seeing the next issue of Genesis, and looking forward to seeing you at the opening on April 6th, 7 p.m. at the IUPUI Library.
Travis DiNicola with IUPUI students and editors of the Genesis Art and Literary Magazine, Margaret Stoner and Tanya Smith. For more information about Genesis, visit the IUPUI website at iupui.edu and search for Genesis. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The new Century String Quartet will celebrate its 10th season on March 22nd with a potpourri of NCSQ commissions since 2001. All from Indiana composers, including James Beckel, Peter Hansen, and Chris Rutkowski. Paying tribute to children of the world who constantly inspire us to reach for our dreams, a newly commissioned work by Frank Felice will receive its premiere, and the ensemble will also play Pedro Villa-Lobos' String Quartet No. 5 of 1931, based on Brazilian children's songs. The New Century founders, violinist Dean Franca and violist Susan Chan, put away their music stands long enough to come to our studios to talk with Sharon Gamble about why they founded the ensemble, how they balance their day jobs with the ISO and their chamber music, and why college is the most expensive dating service.
Before we talk about the concert, I want to talk about, because I remember this, and I know you do too, the beginnings of New Century String Quartet. What did you have in mind when you founded this ensemble, and have you achieved some of what you had hoped to achieve? Susan, Dean, either one, both of you?
Well, it seemed like part of a process. I mean, yes, it was founded 10 years ago, and that's very significant, but we had moved here from San Francisco, and we had another chamber a group there called Accord Chamber Music Society. And before that, Susan and I were in string quartet when we were at Juilliard and performed a lot of things that
Tanglewood.
And at Tanglewood as well. So it all seems part of just another chapter in the novel, I guess. Or
it's kind of an evolution.
Yes, it is. But you're right, it is a significant one. It was our first sort of big chamber music thing here in Indiana. I hesitated when I said that, though, Sharon, because Susan and I met at IU, and we also played chamber music there, and that's kind of how we... part of how we got together. I think of college as just one of the most fantastic things because you learn so much from the faculty and from the students. But let's face it, it really is a rather expensive dating service as well. I think there's so many people I've talked to, you know, that have found their future spouse at college, and I'm one of those lucky people.
And the Scots, of course, chamber players. Mm-hmm.
There's another example, yes. And also at IU, I met some of the musicians that we work with today, including at least one of the composers that's on this upcoming program. That would be Ron McKean, is that right?
Right. Although he wrote his piece for us when we were in San Francisco for our quartet there. So, yeah. But in answer to your other part of your question, well, I think we've achieved so much more than we have expected. Actually, I just am always so grateful and so surprised at how much successes we've had, and you know, and yeah, I think that it's just been a real joy to see a lot of good responses from our audience members and, you know, the media, of course. But just the process of delving into the quartet genre, the repertoire, it's just so rich. There's so much. And it seems like every time we do a program, we have a little tiny bit of idea, and we expand on it. And the more you get into it, the more I research, the more I get out of this little idea, and it becomes a huge discovery for me. And besides playing great music, I mean, the joy of performing, it's just finding more about this wonderful, wonderful genre. And, you know, old music, we go back and find out so much more about how it came about, the history of string quartet and how it developed. And then, of course, you know, finding our friends who were so creative to write these wonderful pieces for us, and working with a live composer is like just, I don't know, what a gift, you know. I guess in the old days, like Beethoven and Mozart and those other guys performed as they were composing. I guess they improvised, and we don't get to do that nowadays. Well, Dean does in his jazz, you know, endeavors, and some of the Baroque players, of course, in Baroque repertoire, they can improvise. But a lot of us, you know, players don't really get to compose, you know, because we're specialized in performing. We don't have the time to learn to compose. So there's a little bit of a gap between performers and composers. So to be able to work together, talk about ideas, and bounce off each other's ideas, it's just, I don't know, it's just a wonderful thing. So.
You know, your anniversary concert is kind of a who's who of Indianapolis composers. I mean, you have, you're going to be doing excerpts of commissions, do I understand correctly, of works from James Beckel, Peter Hansen, Christopher Rutkowski, and a new work by Frank Felice. And boy, the local faculties are very well represented. The composition faculties are very well represented on this concert. How I always ask you this question, and you always have fascinating answers, so I'm going to ask it again. How did you decide what the right pieces were for? No pressure or anything, but anniversary concerts get a little extra attention, and people pay a little closer attention to anniversaries. So how did you decide the program for this?
Yes, well, I think that was sort of a no-brainer, because these works that we had commissioned are just so wonderful, and the commissions mark, in a way, a highlight of one aspect of what we do, which is introducing the public and ourselves to new music. And Frank's piece will be the newest. We have not heard it yet. We have not seen it yet. Hopefully
oh,
we'll
my
see
goodness.
It soon. We have Frank's word that it will be ready. And
I should note that we're having this conversation about 6 weeks before the concert,
yeah,
so don't worry.
And Frank has described what it will be like. He says there will be an element of theater to it, too,
really?
Which we're intrigued by. And Frank is the perfect person to commission for this program, wouldn't you say, Susan, because part of the focus of this program is children of the world, and how children sometimes can point us to the right direction when so many of us grown-ups seem to be lost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but now that we've...
How old is your son?
Yes, now that we have a son and he's
14.
I knew there was a connection there.
but at the same time, nurturing your group, you know, and the music you do, it's kind of like nurturing children too, you know. Mm. you give birth to something and you put a lot of care and love into it, and so
and
I
you
guess
have a, you have a private language. That's one of the beautiful things about watching chamber music. If you're not part of that group, it's so cool, because in the audience you see that secret language that you guys are all sharing, and you know It's a thing to envy. It's a beautiful thing. There's a family there.
Oh, Sharon, I think that's so
intimate.
So true.
Yes,
intimate.
There's
even a quartet by Sibelius, for example, called Intimate Voices. And And the string quartet repertoire is so incredible. So you have this language that you speak, and it's a combination of the four of you that is so much bigger than any single contribution that any person makes. It's fascinating from a scientific point of view. It's a kind of a fascinating thing. And there's so many books that have been written about that experience as well. But it's fun to be, I find this when I go to a string quartet concert, it's fun to be in the audience and try to guess what they're thinking. And I do that automatically, even without thinking about it. Somebody makes a motion, raises an eyebrow, leans to the left, and bobs their head a little bit, so there's a little pause. And it's as if it's like haiku. You have just a few number of words, and volumes are being spoken. I love that about string quartet playing. I mean, my main occupation, you could say, is being a symphony musician, and I love being a symphony musician. Mm-hmm. I've been with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra now for 20 years. Loved every second of it. And there is repertoire, symphonic repertoire, that you will never get a chance to explore when you're in a string quartet. Something's magnificent and something's unique to orchestra. But a string quartet has its own uniqueness as well. And it's always been this incredible private passion that I have to be playing chamber music, even though I'm known as a symphonic musician. Mm-hmm. That's sort of my identity.
That's your most public identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But string quartets has always been my passion. And I think most players, most instrumentalists that you talk with, string players, will say, oh, yes, that string quartet. And what about that Haydn number, such and such, opus so and so? And remember that last movement with the fugue? And they'll talk about even the time that they played it. And they'll remember what the weather was like that day.
Wow.
And what they were wearing. And about that nice lady in the front row who was knitting that sweater, you know, all the way through. And then she stopped at a certain point, you know, and looked up over her glasses. You just remember all of that. It's all part of the experience. And it's just, it's a passion that we have. For some people, it's stamp collecting, you know, but for me, it's string quartet playing.
I think you probably just inspired a lot of young string players to...
Oh, that would
down
be great. Yes, take up string quartet playing. That's the future.
Well, and also part of the focus, the children focus, is, you know, one of the pieces that we're doing is the old piece, the only old piece on the program, I could say, is by Villa-Lobos, which is built on children's nursery rhyme melodies.
Mm-hmm.
So he was such a big educator in Brazil. I guess he was like the superintendent of music education or something like that, appointed by the president, Vargas, in the 1930s. So he was a huge influence in Brazilian music making and education. And he did a lot of things for children. He had a book of children's, I forgot what it's called, CIRDAs or CIRDAs or something like that. It's some kind of circle song kind of thing that children...
Oh, like a round?
Yeah, the round.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the children.
Okay.
Some kind of game and song kind of thing. And that's one thing he did, taken from children's melodies. And, of course, in this quartet, he used that and make a real string quartet based on those melodies. And the other thing about him I was trying to remember is he was the one who actually put music as part of the curriculum in the public education.
You're
in
kidding.
Brazil.
Wow.
So that was a huge development in Brazil. And he also was very into choral singing. At one point, they had these 40,000 large choruses to sing patriotic songs depicting their pride of the country and the beauty of the country, the land, and, you know, so these choral demonstrations, I guess they were called, and, you know, just such a pride for the country. So politically, of course, he was well supported by the government, and he did so much for that country. So, you know, he's a very, very important person. And then he writes this wonderfully delightful piece that celebrates children in such a way that, you know, so that was part of our program. I thought, oh, just how appropriate, we're giving birth to this quartet. It's 10 years old, and now we're doing something that celebrates children.
Sharon Gamble with violinist Dean Franca and violist Susan Chan. Violinist Louise Alexander and cellist Dennis McCafferty are the other half of the New Century String Quartet. You can hear the NCSQ's 10th anniversary concert for free on March 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center at the University of Indianapolis. You can learn more about the ensemble by visiting ncsq.wordpress.com. Again, ncsq.wordpress.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know what happens later this month?
Well, let's see. March comes out like a lamb?
Yeah.
Is that like
in
a lamb?
Like a lion, out like
right,
a lamb.
Right, right.
But also the arrival of spring.
Yay.
Yay. Finally, after a long, snowy winter. And here's a good way to start to celebrate the oncoming of spring with some fabulous chamber music. We're actually going to hear, along with our calendar today, a movement from James Beckel's String Quartet No. 1, played by the New Century String Quartet. And we're doing that because they have a 10th anniversary celebration coming up.
Right, right, right. The interview that we just heard.
That's right.
So, excellent. And we will continue with more, while we listen to this, with more great things going on this weekend on
What Will We Do? What do you got?
Well, actually, speaking of other interviews, my next interview on Art of the Matter today is with Caitlin Swihart, who's a dancer. She's going to be talking about Indie Convergence, which is a big festival that's coming up in a few weeks. But actually, this weekend, she is dancing with Dance Class. Coach. She's one of their principal
dancers.
She's everywhere. She's everywhere. And it's the big concert, Love Is, which is a very romantic concert, also featuring live music by Stephen Stolen, and it's taking place at the IRT all weekend long, and it's a great thing, especially maybe if you didn't get the right Valentine's gift, this is a great way to make it up to your sweetie. Love Is DK at the IRT.
I'm not going to talk about fishing equipment, are we?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Moving on.
Speaking of love, love is at the center of every great musical production, isn't that true? And at Indianapolis Civic Theater, starting March 12th, you can see a musical that was named by Time Magazine the best musical of the 20th century. Now, if you think back to the 20th century, there were a heck of a lot of good musicals written, but this is a Rodgers and Hammerstein classic. Do you know what it is?
Let's see. Does it involve a horse with a pole sticking out of it?
It does. You're right. It's Carousel. Opening at Indianapolis Civic March 12th, running through the 28th, and you can find them on the website and find out more. Indianapolis Civic Theater, it is.
Absolutely. Hey, kind of a fun thing going on at the Fringe Theater coming up on Tuesday night is Jabberwocky. They've been having these sort of conversations with different people sort of about their inspirations and such. They've had them with writers, and this one is actually dealing, the theme is off-key musicians. It starts at 5:30, and it's not exactly tone-deaf musicians, more just sort of musicians talking about their experiences. Jenny DeVoe, Larry France, Becky Archibald, Jose Valencia, and I'm actually going to be, since I'm not really a musician at all, I'm perfect to be the MC for it. So this should be fun.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Are you doing any kind of warm-ups to be the moderator there, to be the host?
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be a big surprise.
I want to hear all about it. I know you're doing some kind of banjo lessons. I'm
right,
just sure
exactly.
of it. Hey, you've heard the buzzword cultural tourism, and maybe you have thought, what the heck is that all about? Well, SPIA from Indiana University, the School of Physical Education and Public Policy and Tourism Management, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just slaughtered their acronym there, but you get the idea. They are hosting their annual Indiana Cultural Tourism Conference on Thursday, May 13th. This is the fifth year for it. The conference theme this year is Engage, Enrich, and Thews. And if you have any interest in cultural tourism, whether you're a hands-on arts administrator or artist, or maybe you're a volunteer or a board member of an organization that is seeking cultural tourism, this is something to pay attention to. I've actually been to this a couple of times. It's well worthwhile. Thursday, May 13th, 5th Annual Indiana Cultural Tourism Conference.
Here's an interesting way to watch the Oscars, which is coming up Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
The Indianapolis Independent Filmmakers are presenting an Oscar Night charity extravaganza to benefit wounded American soldiers. You can get more information at woundedwarriorproject.org. It's taking place at the Georgetown Stadium 14 Cinemas, and there's going to be some special guests there, including Mayor Greg Ballard, who, of course, is was a retired Marine, and also Wounded Marine Staff Sergeant Nick Bennett. And there's going to be lots of great food and drawings and a broadcast of the Academy Awards with a twist. Local comedians are going, and filmmakers and actors will actually be giving the acceptance speeches in lieu of the actual winners. So, sounds very interesting.
Can't wait to see that.
Yeah, so check out woundedwarriorproject.org for more information.
Speaking of films, the Hoosiers film series continues with one more great movie at Central Library's Clues Auditorium, not this Sunday, but next Sunday, the 14th. And it was filmed in Indianapolis and Evansville, and it deals with a sport that's close to your heart, Travis.
Were we talking about Breaking Away?
No.
No.
Another sport that's close to your heart involves a ball about this big around.
Oh, 8 Men Out.
8 Men Out. You
there
win.
We go.
I don't know what you win.
Okay.
Let's call Matt Soucy. We'll find out. He's our film guru. 8 Men Out, March 14th, 2 o'clock, free showing at, and the way it should be seen, on a big screen at Central Library's Clues Auditorium.
Very good. Last thing I've got is Rebecca Skloot, who is an award-winning writer and contributing editor at Popular Science Magazine, has also done some stuff with NPR's Radio Lab, is going to be featured as the lecturer for the Be a Better Writer, which is part of the Clues Craft Lecture Series that the Writers' Center of Indiana is having at the Carmel Public Library Monday, March 8th at 7 p.m., and it is free.
Very good. Free is good. And don't forget that you can see FoodCon at the Harrison Center for the Arts. Actually, if you're hearing us on Friday night, you can still sneak up there and take in some of the opening night festivities. If you're hearing us on Saturday afternoon, still go over and see FoodCon. And it's the kickoff to all sorts of experiences and lectures and films and talks and so on and so forth, having to do with food for thought, a multidimensional, ongoing extravaganza, gala, thing. You know, we have so much more to tell you about because March has lots of great things going on, and we'll tell you more next week when we come back with more.
What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Once a year, the Indie Convergence brings together a group of professional artists from around the country for a series of primarily dance, movement, and performance workshops and presentations. Travis DiNicola spoke with Caitlin Swihart, Executive Director of Indie Convergence, and Robert Negron, Artistic Director, to find out more.
Caitlin, I appreciate this because we're actually recording this ahead of time, but this weekend you're dancing with Dance Kaleidoscope. Tell me a bit about that, because that's your day job, essentially, evening job.
Most of the time job.
Yeah.
Well, Dance Kaleidoscope has a show this weekend. It's called Love Is. It'll be at Indiana Repertory Theater Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday, Saturday, 8, and Sunday at 2:30. And it's featuring three works about the many facets of romantic love. One choreographed by David Hochoy, one by Nick Owens, and one by Cynthia Pratt.
Excellent.
Yeah,
always great to see Love going out to see Dance Kaleidoscope, and this should be very fun with Love Is, and I've enjoyed your performances before, as
Thank
I know
you.
Our listeners have. This totally sort of different thing that we're talking about this afternoon, and that is the Indie Convergence. This is the third year for it, and this is something you're the executive director for, and Robert, you're the artistic director for, and it's sort of a bringing together of artists from around the country, primarily dance and movement, performance, some theater to do workshops and presentations.
Yeah.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of cool stuff.
It is, yeah. It's a little bit of everything. It was founded by an actor, a dancer, and a director. Mm-hmm. It actually happened at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in 2007. Mm-hmm. The Oregon Shakespeare Festival is just so great. And we found ourselves with so much time in between our shows, mm-hmm. And a lot of free theater space. So we started doing all sorts of workshops for each other, and a movement class or a mass class, and it was time to leave after the season was over, and three of us got together, Dara Weinberg, who was the original director of development, and thought there's got to be a way we can keep doing this and come up with an idea of where, and we started talking about Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin is from here, and my brother lives here.
Okay.
And we realized that, it's just a great city to do something like this because there's so much here. And it's also just located in the country in a place where, it's cheap to fly in from New York, and it's cheap mm-hmm. to fly in from Los Angeles, and anywhere else that people
Chicago
might be coming from, Chicago.
Yeah. Okay, let me go back for a second. Cause,
sure.
I'm guessing, Caitlin, you were there because Dance Kaleidoscope,
yeah.
I know, for years performed on the green stage
mm-hmm.
at
Oregon.
Yeah,
I was out there dancing with DK. I was just there for about 5 months, and Dance
okay.
Kaleidoscope used to go out there, and we would do their green show, which is an outdoor show
mm-hmm.
before the plays. So I was dancing. Robert was in the acting company.
Yeah, Robert, no, you're not from here then.
Born and raised in San Diego. Moved to L.A. when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't done too much exploring of the rest of the country. And I was just really enamored with Indianapolis when I came out here.
I'm just kind of like fascinated by this idea of sort of it beginning in Oregon, and it sounds like
mm-hmm.
people from all over the country and say, mm-hmm. well, let's move it to Indy and see how that works. You know?
Yeah, well, it just was the great thing about Oregon is that, you can go, you go to work and you're doing, everyone is, who's working out there is doing exactly what they want to do, and just, it's wonderful. So we were like, well, we can go to Indiana, and it's a great place to gather. It's easier to get there, and, the Indy Convergence is about just taking risks and exploring new things, and a little bit less of the pressure maybe of being in Los Angeles or in New York or one
okay.
of the bigger cities where you really can take a risk, and if you fall on your face, that's okay.
So it is a combination of performances and workshops? I mean, essentially it sounds like sort of
yeah.
artists giving classes to other artists.
So one of our mottos is to teach the strengths you have, to learn from the strengths of others, and to experiment without consequence. And part of that is there's a performance at the end, but we call it an open lab.
Mm-hmm.
And really that's just one more tool that we're trying to provide our artists with. What it's mostly about is creating the free space, place to play, and putting a bunch of high-caliber artists in a room and shaking it up and giving them the chance to work on the thing that's been keeping up at night, that they've had to put on the side for whatever reason in their professional careers, and come with their little pet projects. So each
yeah.
artist comes with their own side project.
There's three parts
yeah.
To it, and then
yeah.
a little bit
yeah.
to read.
Why don't you give me a specific
yeah.
example? I mean, I know that the schedule's pretty big,
yeah.
but let's like pick one sort of thing as an example of how it all works.
Sure. So maybe we could just like have an example participant.
Sarah Basher is coming from New York.
Okay.
And her side project is there's been a small short film she's wanted to do for years. And so she wants time to come here and work on the script and shoot like a rough draft of what that will look like. So she's coming to do that, and we're providing space and the materials and the camera and whatnot to do
okay.
that. And then while she's here, she's also done a lot of work at there's a theater in Ventura called the Rubicon. She worked in the marketing department. So her workshop that she's teaching is marketing your small arts business.
Huh, okay.
Which is helpful to all of our other
mm-hmm.
artists there, but it's also open to the public and free of charge.
Okay.
Then we always have one umbrella project, which is a project that is cross-disciplinary and everyone is involved in. And this year it's actually going to be the set itself. The year before we did a project on Kenneth Patchen, working around his poetry
mm-hmm.
and finding ways to stage that. And the first year was actually directed by Dara Weinberg on the use of the chorus in American theater. And so basically, going back to Sarah's journey, she'll then participate in the Umbrella Project as well. And then at the end, she'll have the chance to, if she chooses, to air the rough cut of the film that she's put together since she's been here.
So you've also, I mean, here you've got filmmakers, arts administrators, as well as dancers, mm-hmm. actors, performers. And it sounds like, I mean, quite a variety of opportunities for both people to give class and then or workshop or what have you, as well as work with other artists. So you've got, I mean, and again, this is not just limited to Indianapolis artists.
No, not at all. It's really bringing people from around the country to Indianapolis, and then, you know, they get to meet people who live and work here, and then also the people who live and work other places. So it's also about, you know, creating a bigger network for yourself.
How about how many people do you expect this year?
We have about 16 people
mm-hmm.
altogether.
Okay.
Last year, I think we had 25 total participants, but that includes local artists as well and mm-hmm. people that we brought in.
It's usually about half people from out of town
mm-hmm.
and then half people that live and work in Indianapolis as well.
And most of this is taking place down at the Wheeler Arts Center in Fountain Square?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And so you mentioned that there are some things that are open to the public. So someone who would want to come down and just either participate in a workshop or see one of the, I'll say lab instead of performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a large part of our mission that, you know, it's an artist's responsibility to be active in their community. So the workshops that they teach to one another are also always open to the public and free of charge. We also have yoga every morning or movement classes that the public is welcome to come and join us in.
And just something to say that all of the workshops are taught at an introductory level.
Mm-hmm.
So we really want them to be accessible to anyone, like your mother, your grandmother, you know, like the postman, or someone who's danced for years. We really want them to be accessible to a lot of people. And so everyone who's teaching one knows that, and they're prepared to teach at an introductory up to like a mid skill level, so that if you want to come, you shouldn't feel intimidated that, oh, this room will be full of
right.
dancers or singers. Hopefully it will be filled with a whole bunch of people who are just curious and want to learn something new.
And, of course, people can find more information at IndieConvergence.org. Caitlin, this is the third year for it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a bit about last year, what sort of happened, or maybe what inspired you, or a great memory of one of the projects.
Wow. Sure. So last year we got a lot bigger than we were expecting really quickly, and a lot of really wonderful things happened. For me personally, I got to work with a choreographer from San Francisco, Erica Rose Jeffrey, and she'll be returning this year as well. And she choreographed a piece called War Letters, and it was looking at, you know, what happens when, basically just when you're away from someone you love, and about that journey. And she had worked on it a little bit before, and she set it on myself and Tanner Hronik, who used to dance with Dance Kaleidoscope as well. And that was a really great dancing experience for me. And, wow, there were really wonderful things that happened last year. So another great thing that happened was Suzanne Karpinski from Los Angeles came and joined us, and she wrote an adaptation of Everyman. And it was the first time she had had the chance to see and hear actual actors read her play that she'd written. And so that was really exciting that she came here and she had a script and she got to see it for the first time on its feet, and I really think the show grew a lot while she was here, and that was something really great that happened.
Very cool. Now, have you always included things like the Pilates class and the yoga class, and, you know, why is this part of an arts convergence?
Right. Well, I guess, first of all, for me, I wanted it to be a part really personally just because I love getting up and moving. And then it's also sort of a community-building exercise, so everyone mm-hmm. who's come and is participating gets together every morning and, you know, works the kinks out. And honestly, I think it's just really good for people. And everybody that came last year was like, oh, that was so great. Like, we love doing yoga together in the morning. And, you know, people went back to L.A. or New York. They're like, I go to yoga all the time now. And I don't know if you have anything to say about it. It's just it's a great thing for the group to do together every morning. And it's something that you do together. No one's, like, doing a solo or anything. So you can work at the level where you are and just sort of feel good about yourself.
Robert, what's your perspective as far as being from outside Indianapolis, as far as how this works or what's happened over the past couple of years, as far as, you know, are you seeing, you know, people sort of, you know, take some of the inspiration they get from this and carry it with them in their travels, or?
Yeah, sure. You know, last year, Cindy Jenkins worked on a piece called Voices from Chernobyl, about the obviously what happened in Chernobyl. And while she was there, she was basically trying to workshop a six-person show that could be mounted for cheaper. And it was immediately done once she left back to L.A. And our L.A. residents actually started a morning weekly coffee meeting in L.A. To just kind of check in with each other and see how they could help each other. And I think that's one of the big strengths that we have is...
And they didn't know each other before they came.
Right, right.
To throw that up.
And lived actually a couple of blocks from each other in North Hollywood.
And had never met until they came to Indiana.
Until they came in Indiana. Huh.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, you know, I know, I mean, I'm certainly a big proponent of what we do here in Indianapolis. I think there's an amazing arts community here.
Absolutely.
But often, you know, there's times where it feels as though, you know, are we, you know, really connecting with what's going on in other cities, with other influences? And it certainly seems as though this is a concerted effort to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. We were just talking this morning, actually, and we were saying that, you know, Indianapolis is full of some of the coolest things that you've never heard of if you're not from here, you know, and I'm constantly going to fantastic shows in the area and seeing just, you know, amazing art all the time. And, you know, that's...
And this year we're hoping to incorporate a few outings as a group, especially for out-of-town artists. So we'll be going to Happy Hour at the ISO and hopefully taking some people to the IMA, which is free, which is awesome. And then if we can, maybe getting in a show to see at Phoenix or Indiana Rep. So, yeah, we really kind of want to show Indy off, too, and let people know all the great things that are here.
Travis DiNicola with Caitlin Swihart, a dancer with Dance Kaleidoscope and the executive director of Indy Convergence, and Robert Negron, artistic director for Indy Convergence. For the complete Indy Convergence schedule, visit, you guessed it, IndyConvergence.org, IndyConvergence.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buseli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I find out about Farewell Jamaica at the Indie Fringe.
Bye-bye. I'll get a preview of the new exhibitions at the grand reopening of the Indiana History Center.
And I'll see what I can dig up at the Indiana Flower and Patio Show. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.